I want to thank you, Manna, for coming here today and taking your time and having people ask some very intriguing questions of what the mindset is of a millionaire. So let's go ahead and get started. Our first question is from Paula. Hi, Paula.
Hi, Gary. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity of having me ask some of the questions that I was thinking about in my pursuit of being successful. The first one is, are you a self-made millionaire? And if you are you aware of having made a conscious decision to create monetary wealth for yourself?
Yes, I am. I'm almost embarrassed to say it every time I have to say it, and I don't say it too often. Conscious decision-wise, I'm not sure. I think I was probably about 15 or 16 years old, and I was in the back of my back seat of my brother-in-law's car, and he was going to work, and he was complaining about, you know, having to get up early and go to work every morning and didn't really want to. And I wasn't too keen on what he used to do. So at that time, I said to myself, you know, I really don't want to be caught in the trap that he is caught in. The doldrums, the everyday doldrums that my dad and mom and everybody, and they were very hardworking, wealthy people, and they made their money the way we made money yesterday, not the way it's being made today with the dot-coms, and you come up with an idea, and all of a sudden you're a billionaire. In those days, it was a penny at a time, and a penny had value. You could buy a piece of candy for a penny. So a little at a time, and they built it up into dollars, and I did not want to be caught in that. And I decided, I don't know what I'm going to do. I had no idea, but I am going to retire by age 45. Because in those days, at age 60, 65, you were probably at the end of your life. Today, life has extended to 70, 75, 80, 85, 90. But, you know, 40, 30 years ago, lifespan was a lot shorter. So I guess I was 15, 16, and just made a promise to myself that I'll work hard when I'm young so that I don't have to be on a merry-go-round to have to say, stop the world, I want to get off.
And unfortunately, that's the way it is for many people. I remember you mentioning something to me that you had an incredible fear, and what was that fear?
Oh, yeah. I really didn't start out life to be rich or the richest guy on earth or the richest guy in the town or the richest guy in my neighborhood. I just had a terrible fear of being poor. I just could not take being poor because we used to be poor to the degree where I had holes in my shoes when I went to school. I was embarrassed to run because the bottom of my shoe would show up. I used to put cardboard in there. And whenever it rained, of course, you know, my socks, the water would seep all the way up.
Is that what we call the good old days?
Yes, those were the good old days. And I didn't find it strange or unusual. I just knew my parents couldn't afford it. I envied my friends, some of my closest friends. I envied them because they would actually get a new pair of shoes. I remember the penny loafer.
Right.
I couldn't fathom owning one. Not even a hand-me-down from my brother, because even he didn't have a penny loafer. I mean, that was a big deal.
Wow.
And we used to put a shiny penny in there where it would show through the straps on top. That's why I think it was called a penny loafer.
Right, right.
Maybe it was an emergency penny. I don't know, but
very good. All right, let's get our next question.
I wonder, what were your beliefs about money and wealthy people when you were growing up?
So how would you answer that, Manu?
I really didn't. I don't know if I had any beliefs about money. I knew money was a means to an end to get what you wanted, but you know, it wasn't like money worship or if someone gave me a whole suitcase of money that I would throw it on the bed and roll around in it. No, it didn't mean anything to me. As a matter of fact, I'm allergic to money, believe it or not.
The physical touch of money.
It's, I don't know if anybody realizes it, but someone gives you $5 a change or $2 change, you take it, you put it in your pocket, you hold on to it tight, but you don't know where it's been. It's probably the nastiest dirtiest, and I don't mean to turn anyone off.
Right, but it does feel warm and matches everything you wear.
Yeah, yeah. It's yours. All of a sudden, it becomes yours. When someone gives you $2, it's your $2. It's not really yours. It's just passing through you. At that time, for that short while, you're borrowing it. You know, it's really not yours. Money didn't mean anything. It really didn't.
But what was your belief about wealthy people? Did you feel that you had something different than they did?
No, absolutely.
Or could get to their level.
Absolutely, 100%. No question in my mind. Whenever I saw a wealthy person, I knew that I have all the qualifications that he or she had, the same brain, God-given brain.
That's a good point. Did you have that thought when you were younger, still at 15
always,
and 16?
Always. Always had that thought.
So if somebody is listening to this and they have some inabilities to do something, I guess they should remember they've got the same brain too.
Absolutely. If someone performs a post-mortem on 10 brains, the weight of each will probably be the same. It's the same brain. It's got the same amount of current and electricity going through it. Your brain is no different. Some people just use it, and some that part of the brain is dormant. Or they take the easy way out.
See, that's a good point, because if people realize that, you know, they're having a hard time becoming successful or they're having a hard time fulfilling their dreams, they have to realize, hey, the only thing that's limited me is my inability to use this brain, because we all have the same one. That's a good point. Let's go to our next question.
Who were your heroes when you were growing up?
Yes, I did have heroes. Most people will say my dad was my hero. Surprise, my dad was my hero. I saw him work, make money, really a dollar at a time. But the ideas that he came up with were what I saw the genius in. And he was an idea man. He did everything, pretty much whatever he did, he was the first in his field to do it. Each of those new ideas made him a lot of money. His weakness was carrying through with the ideas. And I used to wish that I was older, that I was not in school anymore, that I was old enough to carry forth his ideas, to see them to fruition, because he was very weak there. The ideas were phenomenal, but just, I guess, his age or inability to have other people do for him, to delegate to them. Something was missing, a part of a formula. And I saw it at a very early age. And this is weird. I don't know where this came from in my head, but I did see that I could carry forth a lot of these things, carry through these ideas, and make a lot more money than he was making. He used to be penny wise and pound foolish. And I use those words, penny and pound, because I am from a British background, so that stuck in me. I don't believe in being penny-wise, pound-foolish.
Describe that to somebody. What do you mean by that? Explain that.
If you hire someone with a lot of talent and they're worth, say, $20 an hour, and he would pay them maybe $12, and they would be unhappy, they could probably produce a lot more. If he paid them more, in the end, he would be better off. There's certain things that I would never do the way he did it. But then he's from the very, very old school.
Old school, right.
And, you know, his school was a penny saved is a penny earned. That's not my school.
Your school is what?
My school is a penny saved is 10 cents earned. Because I don't look at a penny today as a penny. I look at a penny today as 10 cents when I retire.
Because you're going to do what with the penny?
I'm going to invest it. I'm going to put it in mutual funds, my IRA, or wherever I have money invested. If I have $1 million in my IRA, I don't look at that as a million. I don't see it as a million. I see it as 10 million. I already see it today, now, as 10 million.
Wow.
Why? Because I've done the math. I know when I'm going to retire. I know what the conservative returns should be. And I know that when I retire, it's 10 million. I mean, that's not a million saved, a million earned. It's a million saved. Every penny you save today is worth a lot more to you later on.
If you invest it wisely.
You've got to invest it. There is no if. There is no if. If you don't invest your money now, you are foolish. I mean, I don't mean to be crass.
No, that's fine.
You're foolish. If you've got to invest.
So let's say we have somebody that's got very, very little money, $100 a month, maybe $200. Where would you suggest that they, where would you suggest that they invest that? What would they do with that?
You're saying that as if $100 a month is not a lot of money.
Okay.
Let me tell you, $100 a month extra is a lot of money. There are mutual funds that will do $50 a month every month. Just you keep putting it in, or they'll take it out of your bank, because you got to pay yourself first. And by pay yourself, I mean two ways. One, pay yourself with dollars. For example, your savings. Every $50, if you're age 30 or 20 or 40 right now, $50 now is a lot of money later on. You've got to stop and think and do the math. A lot of people don't do the math.
No, they don't. Now, I don't want everybody calling me up to find out what that mutual fund is, and I want people to know that we're not recommending specific investments here, but that's a good point that to help people realize, because some people realize and think, $50 isn't much, so I'll just go ahead and blow it on a dinner. But like what you're saying, if you look to the future and see what it can multiply into, it can make a lot of money in the long run.
And the second way is you have to invest in yourself strongly. You've got to believe in yourself, and not just after you put money aside, and that's the dollars and cents into the mutual fund. Now you've got to put dollars aside for you, for your education, for your learning, for your
business. For some people who want to be in business for themselves, but not do it all through mutual funds or other stocks or investments.
Right. No, I don't even mean that. I mean for your education, for your
To become more skilled in what you want
to become,
be good at.
To get to your schooling, your knowledge. You've got to keep reading, listening to tapes, watching videos. You have to pay for this. I have taken seminars that have cost me $6,000, $10,000. We may come out of the seminar and my wife may say, gee, I didn't really get $5,000, $10,000 out of this. Well, there's hardly a seminar or a video or a tape that I haven't listened to that I have not gotten something out of. If I get one little teeny-weeny idea out of it, hey, it's worth $10,000.
Right, that makes sense. Good point.
That carries me throughout my life. I got to use it. They say knowledge is power. Again, I'm coming with these cliches that I'm disagreeing with. I disagree with knowledge is power. You can have a lot of knowledge. I can buy a encyclopedia on a CD. That's a lot of knowledge.
Right.
That is no power. That's nothing. You've got to use the knowledge.
So knowledge is only power if you use it.
Only if you use it.
Good point.
Let me give you an example about knowledge, using your knowledge. I don't know if the younger people here know of a man named Howard Hughes. Maybe the people in their 40s do. But Howard Hughes was one of the richest self-made people on earth. And he was a recluse. He used to live on the top condominium, the top floor of his hotels in Vegas that he used to own. And he was watching a game show. I think in those days it was called the $64,000 question. And one of his bodyguards or whoever they were, his entourage, said to him, gee, Mr. Hughes, that man is answering all these questions and he's just going from one level to another to a third, and he looks like he's going to win that $64,000. And let's get him. Let's hire him, because we need smart people. And Howard Hughes looked at him and said, no, that man is full of information. He has a lot of information, but that information I can get a dictionary, I can buy that information for a dime. And, well, in those days, you could buy a dictionary for a dime. that's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for people with common sense, people with self-motivation, people who can get things done, not just people with knowledge. Knowledge, again, is not power. Using that knowledge along with your common sense and your God-given other senses, that is power.
Manna, let's go ahead and take one more question from Paula.
What mental attitude do you think sets apart the wealthy from the poor?
I think that's one of the best questions I've ever heard in a long time. The key words there are mental attitude. It is mental attitude that sets apart the wealthy from the poor. It is mental attitude.
And I think, too, a lot of people who are poor, you'll find that wealthy people, if they lose their money, they don't look at themselves as poor, just broke. You agree with that?
Oh, yeah, temporarily broke.
That's it, temporarily broke.
It's like the $2 that's in your pocket, that the dirty $2, it's temporarily yours.
So that's what people need to realize when they're working on trying to create their own businesses or their own wealth. If you're not at the point where you're making a lot of money, just look at yourself as temporarily broke.
That's right. It's very much so. You just haven't reached there. It's like they say a journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step. Well, maybe you're at your 59th step or your 998th step. It's just a question of getting to that end result. And you have to mentally know. You have to see yourself at the end before you get to the end. If you cannot see yourself at the end, you will not get to the end.
Well, now, Manna, we're going to get some questions from another person.
Hi, Gary. This is Sharon. I'm really looking forward to hearing the answers to my questions to the millionaire. My first question is, in order to get, you have to give something up. What did you have to give up?
Again, a good question. Where are you guys coming up with these questions?
We've got some good ones.
Yes, you do have to give up something. And you have to know up front. You have to decide and make a pact with yourself. What are you willing to give up? I think I could have made a lot more money in my life, but there were some things I was not willing to give up.
Such as?
Such as getting up at 4:30 in the morning and starting off to go to work, like one of my heroes did, Mr. Edward DiBartolo, Eddie DiBartolo. He used to own the 49ers. I think his daughter
and
does.
And you knew him, didn't you?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you knew him.
Knew him, good man, old man, about 70. Would you believe that man used to get up 4:30 every morning? Now, this is after the man owns like 10 banks, 10 racetracks, 10 malls. I mean, he had everything.
So that's a good point, because what you're saying is you were able to figure out where you wanted to be, and because of that, you also, not saying that Mr. DiBartolo didn't, but because of that, you also got to see your kids grow up, you got to do many other things, but you were able to design how far you were willing to go, how much of the price you were willing to pay.
That's right.
Let me ask you something. I think for me personally, what I've had to pay, the price I've had to pay, is to hold back on instant gratification. Give me your take on that. I don't think a lot of people really appreciate what that really means, because they're starting at the bottom, and when they're at the bottom, they want to go ahead and become more successful, but when they want to go buy a boat or a car or whatever, they immediately want to go ahead and put it on credit, get payments for the next 10, 20, mm-hmm. 30 years. Give me your take on that, Manu.
Very much so, Gary. It's like when I mentioned to you that extra $100 a month, I think that's a lot of money. Most people, as you say, would go out for dinner or put a down payment on a motorcycle for fun,
right,
and pay the $100 a month. I don't do that. I wouldn't do that. I don't advise you to do that. I don't advise anyone else to do that. I believe you should invest the money. Invest. Forget the instant gratification. Forget the fact that you want a motorcycle. Think about 20 years from now, you can buy the whole showroom. That's how I look at it.
Right.
There are things tugging at you left, right, and center. Everywhere you turn, there's an advertisement.
Constantly.
Everywhere. On TV. You know, even if you go to the bathroom, I don't know about you ladies, but the men, if we're at the urinals, there is a poster. There's an ad in front of us. We cannot avoid looking at it. You can't turn away. You're looking at an ad. And I said to myself, my God, this has gone too far. You know, I bet you ladies have it on the inside door of the stall.
But it's true. It shows how people are so prone to pick up on these ads and buy, and not invest in themselves and invest in their businesses or in mutual funds or in stocks. But it's a sad thing. And you wanted to say something else, too, about Ed DiBartolo.
Yes. You know, at age 70, that man used to get up at 4:30. Now, this is in Youngstown, Ohio, where when the snowstorms came, boy, those snowstorms came, and all the lights would be off, no traffic on the road. Somehow, he would get to work. By the way, he never learned to drive. He always had a chauffeur not because he wanted a chauffeur, but he never learned to drive. So his chauffeur would somehow get him to work. 4:30 in the morning, that means 5:30, he would take a little lantern, light it. Now, these were like 50 lanterns, he himself, and go and put them on everyone's desk. And this meant to the employees that they can't stay home. There's no excuse. The boss is there. There is light in your office. You got to go to work. This has been told to me by the now mayor of Tampa, Dick Greco, who was his right-hand man, who had a telephone call conference with him 6:30 every morning. And 6:30 is like half the man's day is done.
Right.
Dick is just getting up out of bed.
Good point. Sharon, let's go ahead and have your next question.
Is life more stressful because you have to maintain this level of success, or is it less stressful?
Well, before I retired...
How old are you now, man? Let me ask you this at this taping.
I am 51.
51. And you retired about when?
I retired later than I planned to. I retired at 48, so
poor,
I missed my...
Poor guy, by 3 years.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Before I retired, I had jewelry stores. I had 8 collectible and jewelry stores throughout Tampa and Lakeland.
This is Florida, by the way.
And yes, it was stressful, but... In all fairness, I've got to tell you that I owned the business for 10 years. I'm sorry, I owned the business for 20 years. The first 10 years was a vacation. Most people would say the first 10 years were the hardest. I got lucky. I was one of the few people who, when I opened a store, I expected to do X amount of business. I surpassed that in 4 or 5 months. Maybe because I'm a born retailer. It's in my blood. I know retail. And who was it on TV that said baseball's been very, very good to me?
Right.
Well, the guy was born for baseball. I mean, this is what he was good for. I was born for retail. Actually, I made several statements during those 10 years that, my God, I'm getting paid to do this. Because I loved it. I loved it so much. I loved it with a passion. You must do something that you love.
That's for sure. And you can listen to Mano when he says that word love. I mean, you can see that he means that. And if you're trying to build a business or do whatever it is, you have to love, like you say, Mano. You've got to love it. And you're so right about that. But what about the stressful times? At the point when you become financially successful, I believe at times if you don't know how to handle money, it's just going to make you comfortably unhappy.
That's very true, Gary. You really hit that on the head. It will make you comfortably unhappy. But I think as you grow into your business, you also mature mentally.
Absolutely.
You learn that I made this the hard way. You automatically stop throwing money away. Was earned a dollar at a time. And every time you spend $5, you said, gee, that took me 4 minutes to earn.
Boy, you know, it sounds like you're taking my brain right out and reading it, because I'm the same way. I'm so appreciative for what I have because I've had to work so hard that I don't take anything for granted.
No.
And that's a good point.
Yep. And this will happen to everyone. This is like a metamorphosis. You know, God put these thoughts and feelings into our head that we learn as we grow and we mature. And if I just gave you $1 million, you'd probably spend it, you know, in 3 months, 6 months, a year. But if it's your own $1 million, that's going to stay with you for a long time.
Where was it less stressful for you? You said the first 10 years were, you know, pretty good for you because you enjoyed what you did so much. Where did you have the stress? What was the biggest part of your stress? Because I know a lot of times, a lot of people think that money buys happiness, but many times too, as you become more successful, you also get a lot more headaches with it.
Yes, yes. Again, though, you've got to bring that mental attitude thing into play. It depends how you live your life. You've got to balance your life. You've got to put time aside for your children. You've got to put time aside for your spouse. You've got to put time aside for God. You've got to put time aside for yourself. And you've got to put time aside for helping other people, for doing some sort of charity work. And the rest of the time, you've got to eat, breathe, drink, sleep, dream your business.
So let me interpret this if I'm reading you right. What you're saying then is if you have the right mental attitude, what you're saying is if you keep a strong balance and refresh your life, if you will, by having a little vacation, taking time with your spouse, your children, and keep that balance, you'll be able to handle and manage the stress a lot better.
Yes, and it's not, you know, stress is not all bad. Stress is a good thing, too. We need stress in our lives.
I agree.
Frankly, I think I needed that stress. I'm a type A personality. I get bored easily. The stress that I had pushed me to do harder, to do more, to strive, reach for the stars. And then when you only get the moon, hey, it's still the moon. You know, so that stretch has to be there, really stretch. And the stress will give you that push, that insight, inner wanting to do.
And what I want to let people know too, those of you who are listening to this, if you don't have that feeling of that stress pushing you, you may want to readjust your mental attitude, because that is true with a lot of successful people. I find that we kind of strive off of that stress and we perceive it a little bit differently. We don't perceive it as big problems. We perceive it as something as challenging, something that we can get over and keep going forward with. I think that answers that question pretty well. We've got a couple more questions still from Sharon. Go ahead, Sharon.
How long have you been a millionaire? How long did it take to become one?
I don't know if I mentioned earlier, but I'm from Jamaica. I came here in 76. I did nothing. I looked around for 9 months, and I opened my business in September 77. And I think about two and a half years later, I was a millionaire. So for me, it happened quickly, but I did give my 15, 16, 18 hours a day for those 2 years. And
so we'll have to at least double that, right? Or triple that in normal life. But you paid your dues.
You paid
the piper.
I have paid my dues. I have gone through the higher you get, the more people will take pot shots at you. And I've been through my part of life where people take pot shots at you just because they envy you, or they wonder, they think that you just got the money, it just landed in your lap. They ask you to lend them $100 or $1,000, but if you know in your mind that what he is using it for, you don't agree with that cause, I'm not going to lend it to him. If I think he's going to invest it in business, I'll be the first to lend it to him and then add another $1,000 and then throw in some advice if he wants it, because I want him to succeed.
So what we're going to do, we're going to give out Mano's phone number after this. No, just kidding. Okay, let's go on to our next question.
Is being a millionaire all that you thought it would be?
Yeah, I've been poor and I've been rich.
And rich is better.
Rich is better. No question. You do have problems when you're poor, and you do have problems when you're rich, and they're both real problems. But the ones when you're rich, somehow the money helps you to alleviate those problems. Like when you're poor and you're working and your house, then you got to come home in the evenings and clean the house and vacuum and clean your own toilets. And this is not stuff that we did in Jamaica. We had housekeepers all the time. We had gardeners. Here I've got to cut my own lawn. Well, being rich, I get a lawn service. I get a housekeeper. That being rich does help.
Let me ask you a question, though. What is also your other motives for having the housekeeper and the maintenance for the lawn and so forth? What's your other motive? It's not, I mean, how do you value, do you value that if you did that, that would be an unproductive use of your time?
Absolutely. Cutting the lawn, you know, if the kid charges me $40 or $50 to cut the lawn and it takes him 3 hours, you know, that's like $15 an hour. Why would I do something for that if I believe that I'm worth $100 or $200 or $300 an hour? So that's a great, you know, I didn't think of it. It just comes, sometimes things come so natural to
right.
you that you don't stop to, it's like if I say 2 and 2 and everyone would say 4. Now, how did that answer come to you? You go back and you decipher it. And so I don't decipher some of the things. They just come
right.
normal.
See, unfortunately, some of my friends think I'm, you know, just lazy because I don't do that type of work, quote unquote. And that's not the reason. The reason is I find more fulfillment, more joy doing something else, and my time is too valuable to go outside and mow the lawn. It doesn't mean that we are beneath that, but people don't understand how we value our time. And when you value your time, you're going to do things a lot differently because you're going to take that time and you're going to do something with it. Mana, our next question is from Phyllis.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for including me in this. This is pretty cool. I'm calling all the way from Vernon, British Columbia. I had a question for you. My question is, if you could choose just one, what would be the single most important decision you've made in your life that has influenced your success?
Well, Phyllis, the most important decision that I've ever made in my life is in the back of that car that my brother-in-law drove when I was 15, 16, and I decided I am going to retire at age 45. That was a decision. Always does influence my success. I think if mentally and your brain plays such a huge part in this, because there's a lot of subconscious here that we don't realize. If all day I had you sitting down counting marbles and I say put 50 of these in a bag and do it all day, do you know when you go to bed you'll be counting marbles? And you lose sleep. So if you keep thinking about this is the end result, this is going to be my end result, then your subconscious, while you're sleeping, your mind will say, gee, this guy's conscious has made up its mind. Me, as a subconscious, I got a toe.
In other words, you had yourself so programmed at a young age in that car that I am not going to live this way, that you just started counting marbles all day long, if you will, all night long, and you were, I guess, compelled to make sure you wouldn't live your life that way.
That's right. That is exactly so. One of the things I also wanted was never to wear a shoe with a hole in it.
Well, let me ask you, do you do that now just for the fun of it?
No, I have probably 100 pairs of shoes in my closet. I not worn any of them. And it may sound like I am a
woman with a shoe fetish.
Yeah. I'm not friends with Imelda Marcos or anything. You know, my subconscious probably overdid it, you know. Said this guy don't want to wear a shoe with a hole in it, so
I'm going to buy shoes and just not wear them at all.
Every time I see a pair of shoes I like, I buy it. I think I'm going to wear it because I figure just in case any of my other ones go, something goes wrong, I got a pair of shoes to wear. And it's maybe it's coming back to the fear of being poor. You know, so it's one of the few things. The other thing, and I don't know if I can say this on an open program like this, is I had two pairs of underwear up to age 16. So I used to have to wear the same underwear 3 days in a row because you don't get a chance to wash it. And then after 3 days, it's too dirty to give it really to someone else to wash. So you wash it yourself. And now I've got probably 300 pairs of underwear. I mean, I've got drawers full of underwear that I haven't even seen. I mean,
well, maybe you aren't giving us too much information. No, that's good. But you know, what's interesting is when you share stories like that, in knowing you, I understand for sure why you appreciate the money that you have, why you don't blow money, even though you have the money and you do blow it and you have fun with it sometimes, but you don't do it ridiculously because you appreciate and you remember what you've had in the past and you don't want to live that way again and you appreciate every dime you make.
Yes, Gary. And that's one of the reasons why I have my kids working at a yogurt shop and a sandwich shop, a fast food place.
See, I remember when your kids started working in those places, and it blew me away because I know that you could give your kids anything. So give me the thinking and the reason for you letting your kids do this. Why don't you just hand them a car when you know you can, and they also know you can?
Well, because then they won't appreciate it. Then they'll be lazy mentally. I don't want mentally lazy kids. I don't want kids who can't think for themselves. I'd like to be able to take my kids and put them in the middle of anywhere, any country, without any money, and I want them to find their way home. The only way you can do that is to exercise your brain. Exercise means if you exercise your muscles, they get stronger. You exercise your brain, you get smarter. You feed it. You think. You think your way out of situations. And so I put my daughters in to flip burgers. Hey, nothing wrong with that.
Now, let me ask you, why didn't you have them work in your store? I know you did a little bit, but not overall.
Because no matter what, it's still, you know, I'm the boss's daughter. I didn't want anyone giving them special privileges. I didn't want them using their weight to push people around. I wanted them to be nobodies anywhere else so that they would appreciate how the other half lives. And they need to have that shoe with the hole in it.
Right.
They need to see their friends with the penny loafer and they can't have it. And by that I mean when their friends get cars. I don't want to just give it my kids the car. They've got to work their way into it somehow. And so unless you feel the pinch, the sorrow.
Oh, I agree.
You won't appreciate the ecstasy. You must feel sorrow to appreciate happiness.
And I think the people that are listening to this program that are having a struggle or having a hard time in their business, they've got to realize that this is what you have to do to get to that ecstasy that you're talking about. And so many times we focus on the stress and the problems, but by, as what you said earlier and what we're going to be talking about later, is looking ahead. And if you can see that picture, you'll keep going forward and you'll appreciate that ecstasy is going to come soon.
Absolutely. That's really true. If anyone out there who is really going through a tough time, a hard time, has got to eat maybe one hamburger a day because that's all you can afford right now, hey, you're halfway there. and I don't mean that facetiously.
Right.
I really mean that. If you go through the bad times, your push to want to get to the good times will be more. Your mental attitude will be better.
Mana, our next question is from Donna.
Thank you for including me in your program, Gary. I found out about you through a friend who did the phobia program with you. She had a fear of enclosed places, hadn't been on a plane in over 20 years. You worked with her, and she was able to go on a trip to Africa with me last summer. That was the highlight of our lives. So thank you for that.
You're very welcome, Donna. That's too cool. Tell her I said hi and tell her to keep up the good work. And I know now you have a question for Mana. Go ahead with that.
How has your definition of success changed since you became a millionaire?
Donna, my definition has changed, and you obviously picked that up. I don't know where you guys really, I'm repeating this, I'm sounding like a recorder, but you're coming up with some really, really deep questions. And these are the questions that you need to answer and ask yourselves before, through your trip to becoming successful. But anyway, back to your question. My definition has changed. When I was poor, and you know, I use the word loosely, my definition of success was to make money, to have a lot of money, and I'll be successful. At one stage, I remember taking a shower. I was like 13 years old, and saying, "I am going to make $10,000 a year after I graduate." And in my mind, quickly, I added that up, and I said, "Gee, I'm gonna be rich." And that was my definition of success. It changes again as you go through this tunnel of hard times. It changes. Success is, to me, what success means today is doing whatever I want to do with my time, anytime I want to do it, without any restrictions from anybody except my wife or my kids or any outside source. So success to me is doing whatever I want with my time. I think I'm successful, but my 14-year-old daughter has still kept me unsuccessful. I'm a chauffeur. I pick her up from school.
And you probably don't charge her, right?
No charge. Yes, there is a charge. She has to give me a big hug and a kiss.
Good for you.
Go ahead with your next question, Donna.
What are the major benefits of success beyond the obvious one of money?
Yeah, I kind of touched on that on the previous question. But one of the other things is somehow one day you wake up and you realize, like someone will phone you and say, "Listen, I need some help. Can you drop everything and come over?" And the day I can say yes, then I know I'm successful. That means there's nothing else holding me behind from doing what I want to do. And that as I said, it's success. But the major benefit is, you ever have a big problem, a serious problem, and finally someone calls you, or you know, someone's in the hospital and the doctor calls you and say, "Hey, they're going to be better." It feels like the world is lifted from your shoulders. You feel lighter. You feel happy for no reason. You don't know why, but you're happy. The load is off your shoulders. And that is a major benefit of success. You walk around without that load.